The Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars presents a dialogue special, Millennium, a conversation with Norman Corwin and Walter Cronkite.
The fact is that since we came out of the caves, we began to believe in the fact that we were civilized, a civilized people. Is that correct? Is that accurate? When we still believe that the way to settle our arguments is to kill each other, there's something entirely wrong with that conclusion.
George, may I nominate for enshrinement as heroes the whistleblowers, the dissenters, whether they were as astute as Thoreau, or whether they worked for a tobacco company and could not stand the lying about addiction.
In the 1940s, Norman Corwin carved out a unique place in radio history as a creative artist of truly original craft and distinction. In those same years, Walter Cronkite emerged as one of the nation's preeminent journalists and its most authoritative source of news. Happily, these two grand talents are joined once again in a new production, Memos to a New Millennium. Their work and their thoughts on this special moment in history are the subject of this dialogue conversation. And now it is upon us. After so much anticipation, the millennium is here. Whatever else it may mean, this much is certain. We're closing the books on yet another 1,000 years of recorded history and turning the first page in the first chapter of the ongoing story of our human family. And what kind of story will we write? Will we continue the same rhythms of magnificence and terror, or ascend to some higher understanding of our common destiny? We cannot know what's ahead, of course, but we do know that we will need the wisdom and the poetry of artists, thinkers, and visionaries to point the way. So we can be grateful that two of broadcasting's most original and authoritative voices are joined in Memos to a New Millennium, the most recent creation of Norman Corwin, a production narrated by Walter Cronkite. And it's my pleasure to have as my guests Walter Cronkite and Norman Corwin. Gentlemen, welcome to Dialogue.
Thank you.
Norman, let me start with you, because as the creative artist, I think you expect this question. It's the first one. Why did you do this? And let me offer a hunch as I ask that question. When the first millennium ended, no one knew it. This time, everyone does. There's a lot of awareness in the world. I'm wondering if you, as an artist, are working with that to make us perhaps a bit more reflective than we might otherwise be.
No, you make me reflective about KY1. There was no glimpse, no even minuscule notion then that it would be the kind of world it has turned out to be.
Right.
In this millennium, what a full packed millennium this has been.
Extremely, indeed. Packed with many events, and in your piece you remind us of the seven bloody centuries from 1300 to the present.
The teen centuries.
The teen centuries, and this is the last of them. And Walter Cronkite, you have been our foremost chronicler of this particular
century.
Not for the whole time, no, but certainly for the last half of this century, and it's been a remarkably bloody half century. One of the things that I've welcomed in the work that you've done for all of us is your ability to put that in historical perspective. Looking back, what do you think of this century? Has it, in fact, been the bloodiest in our history?
Well, undoubtedly, it's been the most productive scientifically and technologically of all the centuries that we have lived so far, that we as people have lived so far. Indeed, just the last half of this century has been remarkable for the scientific discoveries, technological progress. It's 50 years like no other in history. And it should give us all great hope for the future. We have only begun, apparently, with the new discoveries to scratch the unknown and progress into it, particularly in the medical miracles ahead and transportation, in information communication. At the same time, I, in doing this piece, narrating this piece of Norman's, I was forced to think a little deeper about what we've been through and what we have yet to go through. The fact that so much is still undone in making this civilization work. The thing that impresses me most is that I have been pretty much of an optimist through my years, until just recently, as I contemplate the millennium and the moving into the next century and the next 1,000 years, indeed. Norman awakened me to some of this. But the fact is that since we came out of the caves, we have, almost since then, that's one point in there, we began to believe in the fact that we were civilized, a civilized people. We now really are convinced that we're civilized. Is that correct? Is that accurate when we still believe that the way to settle our arguments is to kill each other? There's something entirely wrong with that conclusion. And as Norman points out in the Millennium script, we must address ourselves to the problem of peace.
That's a wonderful, wonderful response. And Norman, I'd love to get your views on that, because quite frankly, I think this piece does precisely that. Focuses precisely on the need for.
Well, I'm glad that you and Walter concur on that. I fail to achieve any kind of objectivity when I'm writing my work. I just hope it comes out well. But a wonderful phrase Walter used, to scratch the unknown. Of course, we have to scratch the unknown where it itches. But it's wonderful to have an observer like Walter observing for a nation, for the world, these many years. Listen to that flow of language, spontaneous language. Mm. I at least sit down and work over my things. But Walter's extemporaneous language and thinking is a marvel for me. To write for, or to be in the same room with, to share a microphone.
Well, gentlemen, I feel the same way. I feel I'm in the presence of two masters of language, and I'm very, very aware of that. So let me ask you a question about language and our use of it. In this guise, one of the things that I think is implicit in this piece, and was implicit in what Walter Cronkite said, and you, Norman, just added, is that to move ahead in our search for peace, to make this next millennium a better place, it seems to me we might have to, and I suppose this is the question, get a grander notion of heroism. And I guess the reason I'm asking that is this. This piece made me very aware of how we celebrate the Napoleons and the Caesars with the statues and the avenues and the boulevards. But, gentlemen, do you think that we should begin to celebrate the peacekeepers with the same dedication, devotion, and splendor? Perhaps, Walter, you'd like to go first, don't you?
Oh, of course we should. Of course we should. That's just a very small first step in beginning to dedicate ourselves to seek peace, rather than to spend so much of our national treasure and the world's treasure on preparing for war. If we just put just a part of that effort into preparing for peace, we might achieve it someday. And we have to think very deeply about that. I happen to believe strongly in the need for a world government. We have to have a form of government that can enforce the law, a police force and a code of law and courts to enforce it, so that we can bring the would-be despots of the world to justice before they do their dirty work. That I think that's absolutely essential.
Frankly, I think that's a wonderful aspiration for the new millennium, the distribution of world justice. And I think what you say here about world justice implies, of course, world brotherhood, which would be the fundamental recognition that would bring us to that point, the brotherhood of all.
Of course, where the great barrier is the yielding of sovereignty
right.
by the now sovereign nations. sovereignty doesn't do us very much good if other sovereign nations launch atomic missiles and send biological weapons against us. So we're going to have to realistically approach the question of yielding some sovereignty in the interest of the greater good. And we ought to look back into history and appreciate the fact that the 13 colonies each fought for their sovereignty, held up the declaration of our constitution, not of independence, mm-hmm. but for our constitution, held it up for a couple of years almost as they debated this single matter of yielding some of their sovereignty. They did and put together the most perfect union that the world has known in a democratic style. And that should be an example that it can be done.
Yes.
It's going to take a lot of effort, a lot of teaching, a lot of education mm-hmm. to get it done, but we should be embarking at least on that path.
And on that very same tone, this is very true, both of what you've represented to all of us, Walter Cronkite, and what you have as well, Norman, in your work, this spirit of hopeful optimism that we can do, we can achieve things. Once again, I think that's been a constant theme of your work, and I think it's certainly very strong in this piece as well.
George, may I nominate for enshrinement as heroes the whistleblowers, the dissenters, whether they were as astute as Thoreau or whether they worked for a tobacco company and could not stand the lying about addiction. And these people, together with those who are working toward a compassionate society, the Doctors Without Borders, Physicians for Social Responsibility, those people, the organizations that Walter is identified with, I get the mail on it, and I'm very happy to join it. This is terribly important.
The Interfaith Alliance.
Yes.
Right. What you're telling me is that we're surrounded by heroes. We're
yes.
surrounded by remarkable people.
Yes,
both of
are.
You are saying that.
We are.
That capacity is in all of us. That could light the new millennium.
We have to, in a way, redefine heroism for the peacetime years. It's an interesting thing, isn't it, Norman, that when you ask who are the great presidents, we name Washington, then Lincoln, and Roosevelt, all wartime presidents.
Yes.
Well, Washington came to be president after the war, but elected on the basis of his wartime leadership. This is remarkable. I think the reason for it is not that they weren't heroic presidents, indeed, as they faced the issues of the time, but the fact that in wartime and in Washington's time, we suspend many of the restrictions upon the presidency in order to conduct a more efficient war. Therefore, they have the opportunity to do some things with the society, the government, that those in peacetime do not have to do. So they get a little leg up on their heroism.
But it would be nice to see some statuary, some sculpture to the
yeah.
to the little whistleblowers and the men and women who stood their ground.
Yes.
Uh-huh. When it was difficult to stand their ground.
I think that's something to more than hope for, almost to pray for. Gentlemen, let me take a moment from our conversation just to say that this is a special presentation of Dialogue. I'm George Liston, CA, and my guests are Norman Corwin and Walter Cronkite. We're speaking from the Museum of Television and Radio in New York City. I'd be remiss, Norman, if I didn't bring into this point an element of the creation of this marvelous piece, Memo to Millennium. And that, of course, is the music that Elmer Bernstein composed. That's original music, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And to me, I'd love to hear you speak a word about that. I mean, it had a powerfully evocative sense for me. It really underscored the piece very well. What was he driving for?
With a composer as resourceful and skilled as Elmer Bernstein, you hand him the script, you tell him what you'd like to, the kind of feeling that you would like expressed in this particular passage, this interlude, the backing, of certain speeches that Walter makes, and that's all you have to say. It's like giving an order to the world's greatest chef that comes in garnished beautifully. And he's a master. This program represents two reunions. One is with Walter, who graced a thing that I wrote for the 50th anniversary of CBS called Network at 50, and Walter narrated that. The other is a reunion with Elmer Bernstein that goes back much farther, because in the late 40s, I was doing a series of programs for which he did a score. So, and this is since then, of course, he's been in orbit, writing great movies, scores, hit after hit. Yeah. But I was very happy that he could join Walter and me in this enterprise.
Well, the nicest thing about it is this is a reunion to which we're all invited.
Yes, right,
isn't that right? I mean, this is a reunion for all to celebrate. Gentlemen, let me introduce a philosophical speculation into our conversation. As I listened to Memos to a Millennium, I was put in mind of a book, a life-changing book. I can't say that it's yet changed mine, although I hope it has, and it was by Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl survived the concentration camps. He became one of the world's great psychoanalysts, and he wrote a wonderful book, a hopeful book called Man's Search for Meaning. And what's most striking about that wonderful, very little book is that he tells us constantly that we have a choice. We all have a choice. And quite frankly, as I listened to your words, Norman, and your voice, Walter, I was thinking that that was really the message to everyone listening, that if any good things are going to happen in the way of peace, of shelter, of homelessness, of all the themes that are mentioned in this piece, it's going to be individuals exercising some choice about the way they live their lives. Am I off target?
Yes. I think you're on the same wavelength as Emerson and pals like that.
And Norman Corwin.
Yeah, well, I must say that I am indebted to, as all writers are, they're indebted to the writers who preceded them. And I can count my influences very clearly. And I hope that that I, as Walter has influenced broadcasters, as Morrow influenced broadcasters, a whole generation of them, I would feel very much rewarded if, in any way, I radiated to writers an interest in this medium and gave them, through the good luck I had at what was then a very liberal network, I was able to speak to the country as Walter did every night.
I wish it were possible to convince Norman that he has established that place in the history of radio, right, and not only the history of radio, but the history of communications. Right. He is a great communicator. His words are so brilliantly formed and brought together that there is no doubt, Norman.
Well,
your influence.
Absolutely, no doubt.
Walter gave a very generous estimate of me this very afternoon, and I remarked then, as I remark now, that I would be very happy to have a transcript of that buried with me.
You know what you both represent to me? Let me speak very personally. I could go on at great length, but I think let me use brevity to express the point. There's a marvelous sense of reassurance I have in your presence, because you have stood as icons in this country, in this world, for the best of us, the best that's in us. And I thank you both for that. I really do. And there's something else, I think, that's represented in what you've done, and again in this piece, and that's language, gentlemen, language, spoken and written, the power of the word, which, quite frankly, I wonder about going, if not out of style, at least out of use in our society. I don't know if you have a view on that, Walter.
Well, Norman not only writes magnificent material, but he writes it for the listener. He writes it also for the narrator. It is easy to read. It is poetry. You are sucked in to the rhythm of the words, and it is also the rhythm of the thought. It's a very persistent drumbeat that leads you to continually down his path to those conclusions he comes to. It's a miracle, really, what he does. And this pattern is one that others have tried definitely to imitate, and that's all for the good. This means that he has set a standard to which young writers try to adhere,
right.
And some succeed fairly well. They're not Norman Corwin's, but they can take pride in being very close to his style.
But you know, that's the beauty of lives well lived, and that's why I think I sit here hopeful about this millennium, and that's something I also want to ask you both about, your sense of hope for these next 1,000 years, because as Walter Cronkite has pointed out, and as you both represent, the power of an illustrative life is so wonderful. I mean, that as Walter Cronkite just said, Norman, your words can lead other writers and would-be writers and aspiring writers. I mean, in rural towns or in ghettos, I mean, kids who don't even know that they have that power to develop it, or to hear your voice. I mean, these are wonderful things. And this is why I think I'm preaching a sermon, gentlemen, I'll stop. But this is why I think there is hope for these next 1,000 years.
You know, to me, there are nearly everything Norman writes is memorable. But obviously, some phrases are more memorable than others. And they live with me. They come back to me at appropriate moments. I wish they'd come back more quickly at appropriate moments. I could be a learned speaker beyond anything I could have otherwise achieved. But I was telling Norman at lunch today and others that one phrase that from the Note of Triumph, which was the magnificent ode that
yes.
Norman did on VE Day. And I think you wrote that overnight, did you not? As I remember, something of the kind.
No, there was another program, the VJ Day program. I wrote overnight, but VE Day took me a little while,
a night and a half,
2 weeks,
two whole weeks for a masterpiece. For heaven's sakes, how long did it take Shakespeare to write a play?
Probably in an afternoon.
I doubt that. I doubt that one. But at any rate, the phrase that keeps coming to me so often. Is in his ode, "Post-proof that brotherhood is not so wild a dream as those who would profit by postponing it pretend." That sums up our whole civil rights battle, our whole ethnic conflict around the world. It's all there in that one magnificent phrase. If we could all just post-proof that brotherhood is not so wild a dream. Is those despots who prefer
unfortunately, the postponement of brotherhood and its blood relatives is ongoing. There are those who profit from turmoil, trouble,
yes,
vexation.
All too many of them.
Yep.
And as you hint rather broadly in the new piece. That there are those who profit from hunger, profit from homelessness,
sure.
Profit in many ways from the ills of our society.
It is time, I think, gentlemen, as you've both pointed out very eloquently, for us to begin elevating and respecting those who do not do those things, who stand against those ills. That's one of the great tasks before us. You made me very mindful of that. I want to conclude our conversation by posing the same question to you both for a response. Once again, I have to go back to a book I read ages ago. This one was written half a century ago by Teilhard de Chardin, the French Jesuit philosopher, The Phenomenon of Man, in which he spoke about there being a convergence upward. The same spirit you just gave us so eloquently in that quotation, Walter, of people being able to, in Lincoln's phrase, see the better angels of their nature. And his phrase for it was a convergence upward, that humankind could become closer and ascend in that sense. It's a beautiful, and I wish I could do it justice, but it's a beautiful, hopeful concept about what the next 1,000 years may represent. And so I ask you both, I ask each of you, do you gentlemen share that same spirit of hope, of optimism about what our human family can accomplish in this new millennium?
Norman's going to say that so well that let's leave him for the last word.
Risky assumption.
I have hope because what else is there except hope?
Yep.
To not have hope is to despair of mankind, despair of our lives. They've turned out to be meaningless. We have no hope for the future. Therefore, in a sense of rampant egotism, I have hope.
I think it's important to make the world safe for hoping. One hopes cautiously these days, but it's important to hope in any degree. There is, as Walter suggested, the danger of a kind of suicide in giving up, in saying we're going nonstop, hellbound. I don't think we need be. So long as we are alert, so long as we protect those, the right to dissent, the right to live compatibly with your fellow man, so long as there is room for compassion in this world, then we need not despair.
Gentlemen, I thank you both very, very much.
Norman Corwin was born in Boston, Massachusetts in 1910. By the 1940s, he had gained considerable acclaim for the originality of his radio productions. His commemorative broadcasts occupy a special place in broadcasting and in American history. Among these programs are We Hold These Truths, memorializing the 150th anniversary of the Bill of Rights and first broadcast in 1941. His masterpiece, On a Note of Triumph, was first presented in 1945 and celebrated the victory of the Allied powers over the Nazis in Europe. Norman Corwin remains active as a teacher and writer, as well as a producer-director. Walter Cronkite holds a special place in the hearts of Americans. Born in St. Joseph, Missouri in 1916, his work in journalism began in his high school years. He covered World War II as a United Press international correspondent and stayed on after the war to establish press bureaus in Europe. In 1950, he joined CBS News as a correspondent. And in 1963, CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite as host became television's first half-hour evening news program. Over the next 19 years, Walter Cronkite became the voice of national and world affairs for Americans, and in the process became the country's beloved Uncle Walter. Today, he's chairman of the Cronkite Ward Company, which has produced more than 50 award-winning documentary shows for television. And now stay tuned to this station for Memos to a New Millennium. You have been listening to Dialogue. My guests were Walter Cronkite and Norman Corwin. I'm George Liston C.A., producer and host of Dialogue. Our associate producer is Karen Reed, and our technical director is John Tyler. Our production assistant is Kirsten LaCour DeBelco. Our special thanks go to Mary Beth Kirshner and Ken Mueller. Dialogue is presented by PRI, Public Radio International, and is a production of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Established by Congress in 1968, the center is our nation's official and living memorial to the 28th President of the United States, Woodrow Wilson.
For cassettes or more information on Dialogue, call us at 303-823-8000. Contact us on America Online at Radio Dial. That's RADIODIAL at AOL.com. Visit our internet webpage at wwics.si.edu.